Hello and welcome to episode number 351 of the Super Horror Bros podcast. I'm your host Matt, and joining me as always is my brother Mike.
Hello.
How's it going?
Pretty good, pretty good.
Good, good. We are back in the cinema, finally.
I know.
Been a little while. It hasn't been too bad, I guess, but it just feels really long. It's probably been about a month, I guess, since Evil Dead.
Maybe
it was about 5 or 6 weeks ago, but it's a weird one. Like, we saw a lot of horror trailers before this one. Unfortunately, not many that we're that excited for, but films are coming. But it's just weird that it's like, it does feel it's going to be that case of, it'll just be like August bank holiday, suddenly there'll be every film. That's typically what happens when we're going to Fright Fest. Obviously we're not this year, so at least we'll get to see some of them. Though, like as we said before, we're not too excited for them, but you know, you never know. You got to go in there with an open mind, haven't you? Like, so I think some of them don't look too bad. But it's just, yeah, there's a lot of haunting type movies, which obviously we're not the biggest fan of. And we've got another one to talk about this week. Though this has a bit more behind it, obviously with some interest in writing going on, a director who we've covered multiple times. Obviously it being a Stephen King story as well makes it a lot more unique and special than the sort of typical haunting type film. So yeah, we'll get to that shortly. But yeah, starting with the news, there's a few nice things in here this week, across the sort of film and television spectrum. But kicking things off with what I've been waiting for a while, which is the kind of confirmation of when Black Mirror is returning. Obviously we knew that it was coming in June, and that came and went, and we still didn't have the date. But we now know when finally, after around 4 years since the last season on Netflix. Way too long.
We said take your time, Black Mirror. We did say, but come on.
Yeah, they're in a slightly more unique position than most TV shows. You know, yeah, we've talked a lot about... Yeah, we've talked about waiting for years, literally years, between TV, like seasons of television, I think is awful. And, you know, we're invested in so many shows right now, like Stranger Things and Lord of the Rings and obviously The Last of Us. And, like, you're going to be waiting 2 to 3 years between seasons of those. And in my opinion, that's just way too long. Whereas Black Mirror is different because, yeah, I always want them to just come back when they've got something to talk about, which they clearly have now. But my God, has it been a long time coming. And so I'm just so happy that it's finally back.
For sure.
And yeah,
we spoke about it though, that it kind of felt like they we'll see what the episodes are, but like we heard the synopsis, but it, you know, it sounds like they wanted to get far enough away from COVID so they didn't get sucked into COVID, because COVID was a Black Mirror episode gone wrong, like in real life. And it was like, yeah, we don't need that in Black Mirror. And I do wonder whether they just wanted to have that breathing space to be like, no, cool, there's other fucked up shit that we can now talk about.
Yeah, well, Charlie said at the time that it was basically too miserable to even think about putting out Black Mirror at the time.
Yeah.
And I'm so excited for these 5 episodes because, yeah, I don't see any COVIDness over any of these. Whether or not any of these do end up being like an analogy for COVID, we'll have to see. But judging across, you know, what the little snippets that we've seen and the synopsis and that, like, I don't feel that way at all right now. So yeah, very exciting that on June 15th this will return. It seems like that they're all just coming out, which I think is a shock, because that's all they've said. I'm sure they would have said more at this point, given that this is, you know, next week when this is out. And so, yeah, I'm excited. Like, we're definitely going to take our time with it. Obviously, this is coming out at a good time for us because there's not really much to talk about. So we'll have to figure out how we want to cover it. But yeah, we will definitely be talking about Black Mirror very soon. Probably the next time we record, because we mentioned last week that we won't be here next week, as we are both away. So it'll be the following week, the sort of week of the 21st, which is obviously after this. So yeah, unless some movies come out, obviously there's a few things kicking around, but I can't imagine we've got the cinema anytime soon either. So yeah, we can just take our time and enjoy it. That's exactly what I'm just so ready for this now. Obviously I've watched like a few episodes recently and I'm just in that zone. Like, I'm not really looking forward to watching anything else right now other than Black Mirror. So yeah, very exciting. After all these years, it's going to be surreal when I put on that first episode and I get to see new Black Mirror. That is one of the most exciting things for me. I've rewatched these episodes so many times and know them so well. So to see like a brand new content of like, oh my God, I don't know what this episode's going to entail. Like, oh, it's going to be so exciting. Do you echo that excitement? Are you excited finally for the return of this great show?
Yeah, definitely. And I think just tonally, like, I want to just see what it feels like when that first episode starts. And you know, just you know, I haven't watched any Black Mirror for a while. So for me, that's the thing I'm looking forward to the most, is just like getting back into that zone and just hearing, you know, seeing tonally what it's all about, and kind of, you know, knowing really nothing about kind of cast or anything about these episodes, just knowing, you know, a very brief synopsis, and you know, they've already, you know, gone from my mind, and I just remember thinking they all sound, you know, a lot of them sound interesting, and yeah, I'm just ready to delve in, like, and but yeah, I want to take my time with it as well, and you know, it'll be interesting to see how we cover it as well, you know, kind of traditionally we do like a special on a TV show, but you know, with this it might you know, span multiple episodes. We just got to see really how it goes.
Yeah, definitely. I'll definitely want to check out the run times for sure. Like, I imagine they're usually around an hour, but you don't know with Black Mirror. Obviously, it's been so long that this could be like 5 feature length films for all we know. Like, there's really no telling with the budgets they've got and the cast as well. Like, it really wouldn't surprise me if these were all like 75-80 minute jobs.
Yeah, they feel like they're going to be long, but
yeah, I just can't wait.
As well, though. Like, I don't want each episode to be like 86 minutes. You know, I want it to be like, oh, there could be a 2-hour, but there could also be a 24-minute episode. You know, it's just like I want Black Mirror to tell the story it needs to tell, like it always has done.
Yeah, their sweet spot for me is usually between the 45 to 1 hour mark. Yeah, and I would say, sure. I think White Christmas is one of the only longer ones that is successful because it has so much going on. I think some of the lesser episodes are the feature length ones. I remember the, I think it's called Hated in the Nation, the Bees one, which was kind of, at the time that was pegged, it was the final episode on the season, and it was their first like feature length episode. And whilst it is a good episode, it's certainly one of the weakest ones. I think that is because of the runtime. So it's something that they definitely have to be wary of. But yeah, and also, yeah, like with those going into those synopsises, like there are 3 out of the 5 that I'm already so excited for, just based upon those brief write-ups. And 2 of them in particular sound super like horror focused, as we discussed on the show. You know, they almost sounded like creep show segments. Yeah. So yeah, rather than like sci-fi focus. So I cannot wait for the show. It's so, so exciting.
Not long.
Not long indeed. But yeah, next up, this is a pretty cool one. Half expected, but you never know in the indie world. But this is certainly one of the kind of biggest breakout hits, certainly in horror, in recent years. And certainly the, you know, we've discussed it before on the show, but it's the continuation of, in my opinion, a sort of modern day horror icon, in Art the Clown. Obviously featured in 2 Terrifier movies to date, you know, talking about run times, that last Terrifier movie.
Jesus Christ, that was something, that movie.
Unbelievable. I still can't believe that they made a Terrifier sequel that was 3 hours long. Like, I can't believe it. It's mind-blowing. And it is a good film that we enjoyed, but my God, does the runtime. Like, I don't think I'll ever watch that film again because it's so insane.
There should be a 70-minute cut, like, and it would be a banger.
Yeah, like the first film. But yeah, they have announced, this is crazy because this Deadline reported on this news and it came out of Cannes this week, which is, I'm like, this just doesn't seem like the market or place for this, but I love it. They've officially announced that they were on market apparently, with like, yeah, some of the distribution rights. So like, they're doing so well, which is such great to see, obviously, when these like indie horror movies break out this way. And for all of its faults, like, I think we both root for Terrifier and especially that lead character. We want to see more of him. And so, yeah, they've officially announced, obviously, that they're doing a Terrifier 3. They've said that filming is expected to get underway this November or December and will release late next year. So I hope that's true, because Terrifier 2, the wait was awful. I know it's different. That was, you know, semi-crowdfunded. There was the massive COVID delay that then got the reshoots after COVID, and that's why the runtime ended up, yeah, being so bloated. But, like, it seems like this will be more of a normal production, hopefully. So, yeah, I would love to just be able to talk about this one and then have a quick turnaround, because it will be a film that I'll get sick of quickly if we have to keep putting updates in the news for, like, 1 year, 2 year, 3 years. But I'm excited. I think it's cool. Like I say, I'm not the biggest fan of these films so far. But, like, I'm more of a fan of the franchise than I am the films, if that makes sense. Like, I know that's such a weird thing to say.
I'm way more of a fan of art.
Yeah.
And the idea of Terrifier than I am the movies, for sure. Because I think both movies, the highs are incredibly high. I.e. the kills. And the way art looks, just everything with art and him, you know, being a Mew. And in the second one with, like, the female clown and all of that stuff was good. And it just had so much other stuff. And, you know, the first movie was the same, where it was like art killing people was great. But then there was just weird, like, unsure what's going on. And this wraparound of the TV show with the interviewer getting attacked and all of that stuff. It was like, oh, I just want there to be, I want it to be more of a modern day Friday the 13th, like, just be a bit more simplistic, where it's like Art the Clown's back and he's killing people and he's fairly difficult to kill, so you got to do something crazy, like a proper throwback, you know, is what Victor Crowley was, you know, where it's like, yeah, I don't want there to be like this. You know, for a chunk of that last movie, I thought Art was going to be the dad of, like, our lead. And, like, the lead character just had so much stuff going on and all these dreams. I'm like, no, I just want, like, Art to get resurrected by a dog pissing in a grave, you know, and then him just to, like, kill people for about 70, 80 minutes. And then he gets killed in some crazy way. Like, really make it simple, because, you know, the highs are very high with those. Yeah, and I think we are yet to see the true kind of movie that delivers on everything else, really, which is just give us that.
Yeah, definitely. I don't want to, like, end on a downer, but I was just seeing the one of the things that they noted, which, again, this is kind of their speculation.
It's gonna be
It says Deadline notes that whilst the plot is kept under wraps, Art the Clown and Sienna, the two characters, are among cast expected to return. And I was just quickly googling Sienna to make sure that, yeah, she was the lead in the last film.
Right.
And, like, whilst I didn't dislike her or anything like that, to me it just felt a bit, like, painful what they were going for. I remember the moment that movie started, it was like, oh, they're setting up this, like, big, you know, strong final girl character. And it really all felt like they just came up with the idea of her wearing that Valkyrie costume. And it was like, right, let's reverse engineer this for the next 2 hours. And I wasn't a fan of it by the end of it, where, like, I don't want to see more of her. Like, it was fine in this movie, but, like, if that's where they're going to go with this and try and make this a franchise that has both a famous protagonist and famous killer in, you know, similar vein in, like, a Halloween, like, that's so hard to pull off. Yeah, exactly. And, like, it's so hard to do. And I would much rather the focus be on Art than these other characters. Because, yeah, like, I again, much preferred when they were just sort of throwaway characters that he was killing in the first film.
Yeah. I mean, again, let's Friday the 13th this shit. Like, killer in the opening scene. I'm sorry.
They're not going to do that. Like, the writer and director and creator of all this talks about that character as well. Like, he loves her so much.
That's the problem. Like, the thing that I hate most about the franchise is the lore that's been created. Because even, like, the female clown, I'm like, I just want her to be a tangible killer, like a second killer.
Yeah.
Like, you know, and you know, these dreamlike sequences and everything else give us really good horror, but I just want it to be more in this world, you know. And I just think about, like, a couple of the scenes in that movie, like when they go to the prop store and stuff, and it was like, they're so crazy, the kill scenes, and they're so long and drawn out, and, like, that's the style where I'm like, I want to go see these movies for that. And, you know, similar to, like, the Rob Zombie movies, where I'm like, oh, okay, I'm going to go see something pretty hardcore. And, like, Some of the other stuff in a traditional kind of Rob Zombie box, I don't, you know, the tick box, I don't necessarily like crave, but I accept that they're part of the movie, you know. And then I get the highs. Whereas with this, like, there's just so much other stuff that does frustrate me, and I'm like, yeah, just I really do hope they simplify it, because yeah, as we keep saying, I just think we could the best Terrifier movie is yet to be made.
Yeah, I completely agree with that sentiment, and I think it needs to be a continuation and evolution. But my early assumption would be that we're in the minority. I think everyone that enjoyed Terrifier enough to check out the sequel probably loved the choices for Terrifier 2. At least that was the general, you know, consensus in the horror community, and it did really fucking well. So I think they're going to double down. I think this is Terrifier 2, which is obviously not what we want. But yeah, we'll have to see when they do finally make Terrifier 3.
But we all loved it because the kills were so gnarly. That's what they need to realize.
Yeah, the kills are amazing. They really are. Like, it's such a shame that they are trapped into this just ungodly, likely long film. Because I'll have to just watch like a supercut of all the kills from both films, because my god, they're crazy. And I just love the performance. That is by far my favorite thing from the films, is the performance of Art the Clown.
Yeah,
I think that actor is so awesome in that role. It's so cool.
He's so unsettling as a character as well. Like, you know, just you see him and he is terrifying. You know, it's so good. And like you say, the different facial expressions he pulls off, just, the performance is great.
Yeah, it's so hard to do comedy and horror that effectively. And I love that it never goes too far one way or the other. Like, you never know which art you're going to get from scene to scene, which is so cool. And I do think that is very similar to actually what you mentioned with like a Rob Zombie style character, that they can do like the scary and the comedy at the same time. It's interesting. But yeah, we shall see. Next up, this is a pretty interesting one, actually, because this is a film that, whilst right now hasn't been officially announced, we'll point to some evidence here that is suggesting otherwise. But there was a movie that came out in 2021 that we both enjoyed enough to put in our top 10, called Resident Evil, Welcome to Raccoon City. Which I've definitely wanted to rewatch. I've only seen it once at the cinema.
This conversation's fucking happening, is it?
Yeah, we'd have to unpack everything in the Resident Evil universe, please God, right now, because we don't have 5 hours. But we liked that film, you know, that's the short of it. For its faults, we liked it. And this has come out, so this is fascinating that the Sudbury.com, which is, I believe, a place, I'm assuming in Canada, based upon the rest of this information, they've let it slip that the city has received funding for a new film project, and that film project is called The Umbrella Chronicles. Now, that will become very sort of, I mean, if you're even, I guess, a vague fan of Resident Evil, you'll probably know the name Umbrella by now. But there is literally a game called The Umbrella Chronicles from 2007, which is one of the sort of weird offshoots of the franchise. It's an on-rail shooter. It's not a particularly great video game. Certainly not in the top, you know, 10 amazing Resident Evil games or anything like that. So it's a weird one to pull the name from, for sure. And yeah, they've kind of said on their website that they're receiving 2 million CAD, which I'm assuming is Canadian dollars, from the government to fund this. And it's being developed by Raccoon HG Film Productions, which is the exact same production company that made the 2021 movie. So there is no smoke without fire. This is all pointing to clearly a sequel to that film. Or at least it's definitely a Resident Evil film with the title, with the production company. I'm assuming it's a sequel. They were setting up a lot of sequel stuff in that film. But it is fascinating to me that this hasn't been announced yet. When you're getting like government funded and all that shit, like, clearly this has been greenlit. So I don't know why Sony haven't just said like, yeah, we're doing another one.
This just sounds like clear money laundering to me. I'm not gonna lie. I don't think there's any film being made. I think there's just the Canadian government is $2 million down.
It sounds like that, and it also sounds like classic Sony film production where they don't know their arsehole from their elbow.
Both of those things.
But yeah, I mean, let's put that to aside and let's take this, and obviously we'll confirm it later down the line.
Take what?
they're making a sequel to that film that we both enjoyed.
I would be happy with that. Like, I think For sure, because I think, like we said, I hope the filmmakers, you know, continue as well, like the same people and everything else, because they clearly had enough passion for the games and had enough, like, real want to bring that visually onto the big screen. And they did in so many ways, with the budget they had and, like, with the time they had. They tried to tell too much of a story, you know, too many things, but we got to see a lot of awesome things, you know, that probably, you know, the video game world on big screen or in live action, some of the best stuff we've seen is going to be taken from that movie now, you know? And so, you know, getting a sequel and maybe they can just calm down a little bit and, you know, just be like, okay, well, we're going to tell this part of the franchise and still keep it linked to the games and everything else. Like, yeah, we said when we reviewed it, we'd like to give him another roll of the dice for another movie. And yeah, I still feel that way.
Yeah, I completely agree. Like, we kind of came up, like, I can't remember exactly what we came up with on that episode, but we talked about a potential sequel. And it was basically how they did that film, where they took from multiple games and kind of mashed them all together and made it work. And I do think an amalgamation of definitely Resident Evil 4. Like, Resident Evil 4 needs to be the major jumping off point for the sequel, in my opinion. It's one of the most beloved entries anyway. We're now coming off the remake, which people love so, so much. It's so iconic, that village setting. But you could even pull in stuff from... You can kind of throw in a lot of the end stuff of 5 in there, particularly because of how beloved Wesker was, and I thought he was great in the last film, as well as the kind of setup that they did of Ada. So that all makes sense. You can kind of smash 4 and 5 together, and then you can even bring in more recent stuff. Like, they talked about at the time that they have the rights to everything. You could pull in 7 and Village into that, so I could genuinely, I know that sounds mental, but like, he could do it 4 and 5 and 7 and Village, obviously not telling the whole story of those 4 games, obviously not, but like different things of them, you know, like the Baker family could be part of it, and then mash the Village stuff with Resident Evil 4. Like, I would love to just see what that would look like. And I just think that, yeah, the actual kind of toy box that you get when you get an IP like Resident Evil is mind-blowing. I think a lot of people don't truly understand how incredible that is. And it's why the games are so, so special. And so I would love to see more of this. Like you say, I think it was a good first step. I think it definitely got too much shit.
For sure. Really, during the TV show that we just had,
it really was, and like, I know it's nowhere near the level of the games. I've always said that, and that's my standard for these video game adaptations, is that when I play a video game that I think is 10 out of 10, when it's the peak Resident Evils, and when we talked about Bioshock, and that was why The Last of Us is like unbelievable, because I think it's the only one that's even close in terms of quality across the two mediums. And yeah, we've never seen a Resident Evil film, anything live action Resident Evil, hasn't even come close to the best half a dozen video games.
No, but that ship has sailed. I think that's the thing, that like, the IP at this point has had too many reiterations and everything else, and reimaginings, that it's never going to be picked up and given that level of budget and care and everything like The Last of Us got. Like, we're just, it's not like going to get
sullied in live action as well, because like, people, it's kind of already sullied in live action. Know about Umbrella and Wesker and all these iconic things now, don't they?
Yeah, there's too much, and so we have to just accept, and like, this, so, you know, this being good, we have to accept good in this case. Like, we want great and we want amazing, but like, we're not going to get that in this franchise, even though it's one of our most beloved. We have to just accept that people making it that care as much as these people clearly did, with enough of a budget, can give us something that's still pretty damn good.
Yeah, I completely agree. I think that's good, and I think it was fun as well. Like, I wanted the fun aspect of Resident Evil. I think there's so much of the po-faced seriousness, which is weird, because the games aren't like that at all. The games are way more zany in tone, and it's weird how serious the films were, how serious the TV show was. So I liked that this was the first time that it was kind of, with its dialogue and its references, it was kind of a lot more fun. And I think with that, the kind of setup that I've, you know, briefly mentioned. There's so much potential for fun there with the characters that you would pull, like the Baker family, like the new versions of Wesker and Leon and Ada. Like, that would be so much fun. So yeah, I'm excited to see like when they'll actually announce that this isn't just money laundering. So yeah, we'll keep you updated on that one.
I hope that's the announcement.
Yeah. And then lastly, this is a very quick one because it's a movie that we have done an entire show on and we're big fans of. But I saw this come through the email in the last week, which is that Shudder are debuting the Irish folk horror film Unwelcome, coming to the service this year. So it's apparently coming on June 23rd. So yeah, only a couple of weeks away. Actually, I didn't realize it was so soon. And I'm hoping this is worldwide. They don't specify it as much, which I think just assumes that they've kind of figured it out now. Like, I can't remember the last time I was frustrated with Shudder in that sense, that typically now when they talk about something, it's just on there.
They seem to have really sorted that shit out, which is great, and I hope that is the case with this.
Yeah, like, you never know with something that's more British-focused, because, yeah, I always worry of, like, oh, yeah, will it be available worldwide? But it seems that way. But, yeah, we'll obviously check in a few weeks. I'm super excited to rewatch this film anyway, so this is perfect.
Yeah.
But, yeah, we did a show on it at the start of the year. Absolutely loved Unwelcome. Like, mm-hmm. It's one of those... such a strong recommendation. Go in knowing as little as possible. So yeah, absolutely perfect if you already have Shudder. Just with the second you see that word Unwelcome, just watch it and then you can thank us later.
Yeah, well, you can listen to the podcast later. That's what you can do.
Yeah, exactly. And then thank us. But yeah, awesome stuff. Like, just continuing on from last week, like, Shudder just continued to make the right moves. They're just an awesome service for horror fans. But yeah, that is it for this week's news. Shall we talk about this week's film?
Let's do it.
Let's talk about The Boogeyman. So yeah, this is a pretty interesting film, actually. Like, on the face of it, and obviously when we'd seen like the trailer and you hear the title, it sounds pretty generic, you know. Maybe that sounds harsh right off the bat, but I'm just kind of being honest that it's a generic title for a movie, and it's a lot of dark scenes and haunting scenes, the typical, like, oh, it's a family being haunted by a mysterious presence type film, which obviously, one, we've seen a lot of those, a hell of a lot of those, and two, we've been perfectly honest from day one that they're not our cup of tea within the horror genre. But there is more to this one. Obviously, most notably by far is that this is an original Stephen King story. Rather fascinatingly, so this is a short story of the same name that was first published in 1973 in a magazine, and then it was 5 years later as part of his Night Shift collection of short stories.
Oh, really?
Yeah, so this is like 50 years old, this story.
Jesus Christ.
And to my knowledge, it's never been adapted, certainly not in a big budget film, and I can't even find any TV adaptations or anything, which, like, in this day and age, and this isn't even a joke, he sells the rights to his books before he publishes them. That is like legit what happens because of the obviously the esteem of Stephen King. You know, they don't even care what it is, essentially. It's like he can just sell it based upon his name alone, which obviously makes a lot of sense.
I mean something like King. This is interesting because, you know, if it was published in a magazine first and then in this, like, collection, like, you know, where was the ownership, etc., of 70s King? We also know that, like, you know, 70s King wasn't exactly like focusing that much on anything, really. Like, you know, so, yeah,
it was a great time.
It was a great time for him. Like, how short is the story out of interest? Do you know?
I think I can find it here because it's,
because it feels like it was a very short story.
Yeah, it doesn't say on the Wikipedia entry.
No, but the fact that it was published in a magazine, like, yeah. I mean, I guess, you know, but yeah, it feels like it was a short one.
Yeah, I'll try and find that in a second. But yeah, basically, yeah, like I say, it was published back then, and then they've been trying to get this movie off the ground for a little while. Announced back in June 2018 with Scott Beck and Brian Woods attached to this movie, writing the screenplay, which they still ended up doing in this final project. They wrote the kind of film version of this, so they get the credited as story by and screenplay by. obviously based upon the Boogeyman. So that's pretty interesting that they get two separate writing credits for this one. Like, I would assume that there's quite major changes to the short story. I have read a little bit about it, which we'll get into later. So that's very interesting. Obviously, we're huge fans of Beck and Woods as well. Like, we should state that, you know, we've seen,
yeah, obviously, I was going to say, you know, they've not missed, really. You know, they've, you know, Quiet Place, Horn, 65, like, we've liked all of their recent work. Quite a lot,
yeah, especially within a writing capacity. That was the thing that was easily the most exciting for me personally, was knowing just how talented they are as writers, being like, oh damn, like, I definitely want to see anything they have any sort of writing credit on. And then lastly but certainly not least, the director, obviously Rob Savage, British film director. This is, I think, his third feature, and we've covered all of them. Which is pretty rare. That's not really the case with a lot of directors, I guess. But obviously kicking things off, the smash breakout hit in Host in 2020, which we both had a lot of fun with. I think at the time it was fantastic. It was in our top 10. It's one that I don't think I'll ever go back to. Like, maybe I will in a very long time. I would love to go back in like 15 years or something. But it's not one that I'll eagerly go back to, because it was such a time and a place. And I think for recommendations, we said it, like, you had to be there. It was wild that that movie came out in 2020.
It's like, we were still in the trenches, man. Like, that's the thing, we were still in those trenches when that movie came out, and so it hit, you know, I've spoken about, you know, a lot about kind of how I don't really want COVID in my movies anymore. And, you know, but this one was there, you know. It was right there when it was going down, and so like, at the time it felt right.
It's very, what Host for me is like Blair Witch is for fan footage, where Blair Witch did not invent fan footage, but it did it so iconically in a way that will always be the one that everyone thinks to. And I think similarly with Host, I'm not going to sit here and say I know for a fact that it was the first big film that was a breakout hit that did the COVID thing in COVID, but that's what I'll remember. Like, it was the one, like, oh, it was a film about COVID that was shot during COVID, that came out during COVID, and it was massive. We can't understate that it broke out in a way that, like, it wasn't just horror people watching Host. And maybe that was because everyone wanted to see new films, but that was so massive. The amount of people that I spoke to who do not watch horror films that saw Host was crazy to me. And so obviously everyone involved in that was clearly going to go on to sort of bigger and brighter things. And like, he immediately signed with Blumhouse and other companies. And his follow-up to that was Dashcam in 2021, which sadly we did not like anywhere near as much. In fact, I hated that film. But I do think it's interesting because it even says in his Wikipedia, when he directed Dashcam, a film that was not received well because of its controversial lead character.
Yeah, she was so annoying.
Yeah, that's putting it lightly. I feel like it's so difficult to even judge how I feel about Dashcam from like a directorial standpoint, because it's genuinely the worst lead character we've had in any film covering the show for the last 7 years. Like, she springs to mind immediately as the worst, like hands down, no question. So I almost can't even attach anything else to that film anymore other than my hatred of that character. But we didn't like the film regardless.
And it's so funny though, those Screen Life movies, we've had multiple ones where the lead is this obnoxious kind of character where we've said they've been perfect and we like them because they're like that, and she is so close to them. There's like this line and they just made it on that side and she just didn't in any way. You know, and there's a parallel universe where she has just tweaked a little bit and could have fallen in the, oh, okay, I accept that you're annoying category, like these other ones.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. Like, the guy in Cloverfield is like the prime example of that. Yeah. And I had to look it up because I couldn't remember the title. Deadstream from the start of this year.
Yeah.
Was like, he was a purposely obnoxious character that was so good. Like, it worked brilliantly for who that character was trying to be, as this sort of annoying, disgraced YouTuber that was trying to come back. It was so good, that film. Then we get to obviously The Boogeyman, his third movie. But yeah, this is clearly a much bigger thing, is worth mentioning. It's like Dashcam was similar size to Host. They both had around 100k budgets, whereas this movie has a $35 million budget, which is like, you know, you are going, and again, that shows you the success of Host, is that he went from being a guy making minuscule films to like pretty much the peak of horror. You know, like, I actually want to look up, and again, I'll look up a couple of things in a sec while you go through the synopsis, but, like, because I know famously Jordan Peele's, like, early films cost $5 million, but I almost want to know how much Nope cost. I know it did cost a lot. And even looking up, like, what did Flanagan get for Dr. Sleep? Like, what did, you know, Eggers get for Northman? Because $35 million is so goddamn much for a genre film.
Like, you know, I'd be interested to see what the recent, like, Blumhouse movies were doing, and, like, Scream and stuff like that. I mean, Scream's not fair, I guess, because, again, you know, like, Scream 6 would be interesting because it's got less publicity.
Yeah.
You know, because, yeah, 35 is a lot, especially for like a horror movie of this ilk as well, where, you know, the main cast member that people have seen would be kind of Vivian Blair, who you know, was Princess Leia in the Obi-Wan TV show. Other than that, like, you know, there's people that, you know, not going to be like crazy well known, so you're not paying like, you know, you're not paying Courtney Cox coming back to Scream money, you know, for this. But yeah, basically,
I will just quickly say Scream 6 had the same budget, $35 million.
That's fucking insane. That's insane.
Yeah.
Jesus. Right. Anyway. Yeah. So The Boogeyman is, God knows what this is about. What is this about? It's,
this is a good start.
It's hot already. We sent around the Harper family, who are basically just coping with the loss of their mother slash wife, and we're now the dad and two girls. At the same time, the dad is a therapist, and he is seeing patients at home. And he's not dealing with it really well at all. That, you know, as a therapist, you'd kind of assume that he'd be able to like talk to his kids and stuff, but he is basically shutting his children out and sending them away to speak to someone else, and just kind of seems like he's throwing himself into his work. And he has a patient kind of come to his house unannounced, and he decides to see this patient, and reminds me a bit of like Smile almost. You know, this kind of scene where like basically this patient is in like the end game of being haunted by this presence, and is being, you know, close to the edge, being driven close to kind of insanity, where he is scared to have the door open in the office, like a closet door, and seems terrified of the dark. And kind of when Will kind of he senses that this guy is a danger to himself and possibly him, and is grateful that he thinks he's in the home alone. He's home alone. But his daughter Sadie has come back, and she's in the house as well. And kind of he goes off to try to call the police and get, you know, some help, and the patient goes off into the house and goes wandering in a scene which was pretty, like, you know, pretty well done and pretty tense. Like, when I saw that Sadie had come back and this guy was around, and he you know, was fucking unhinged, I was like, man, this is pretty intense. And
I always love when characters are listening to music so they're unaware of their surroundings, because as someone who's constantly wearing headphones, that's like my biggest fear, is that I'm not aware of things that are like behind me. So I always love that in horror films, because it scares me.
Like I enjoy it when I'm on a dog walk with music on, and I'm like, I get myself a bit freaked out at times, so my head eventually this guy hangs himself in their mother's old art studio cupboard. Sadie is the one that discovers him, and kind of as soon as he is gone, this presence, this boogeyman presence, seems to attach itself to Sawyer, played by the already mentioned kind of Vivian Blair. And yeah, it's basically, you know, the generic name Boogeyman is kind of what this thing is. It taps into your fear. And so for Sawyer, it's this monster that's going under the bed and in the closet and kind of, you know, the real kind of generic kind of, you know, Boogeyman spooky stuff, which is something that I found interesting when I was watching this, kind of thinking like, man, that's strange that this is like, I was like, why is King doing something so generic and so kind of, you know, we've seen a million times, and it's like, oh, because he did it 50 years ago. Okay, that makes a lot more sense now.
Yeah.
You know, because watching this movie, you know, and with the Boogeyman and this title, and like I say, this thing under the bed and the thing with the light and kind of, I'm like, shit, like in the 70s, reading this, it would be one of the first times I'd have come across it, you know? When the hell did Poltergeist come out?
That was like mid 70s, I think.
Yeah, so like I thought it was like early 80s, but Exorcist was 70s, wasn't it? Was Exorcist 77?
Exorcist was 78. Oh yeah, you're right. Yeah, Poltergeist was 82.
Yeah, I thought Exorcist was before 78, but okay.
73.
Earlier. Yeah.
I was thinking of Chainsaw Massacre 78.
Yeah, but yeah, so, you know, they'd been a bit around, but not a lot. And then, you know, King writing about it, it would have felt way more fresh. Whereas, you know, this movie doesn't, you know, have, once we get past that initial guy killing himself, we do get into a very generic haunting movie at that point, with this thing, this presence that is haunting the two girls, basically. I mean, do you want to hold, or do you want to punch? I mean, tell me what you think of this one.
Oh dear. This is such a weird one, like, because I don't think this movie's like abysmal by any stretch of the imagination. It's just, it's so uninspiring to me. Yeah. And I think, obviously, again, like, we'll just preface it again, and then I'll try, I swear, to just leave it at that, to not bring up, keep beleaguering the point, but, like, this isn't our type of film, or at least I'll speak for myself and say this isn't my type of horror film at all. And I find these to be just a slog in general, and as we've mentioned before, like, aside from The Conjuring 2, there really isn't any of these that I love. And so I'm always kind of like, God, I'm a bit reserved, and I'm a bit like, this is going to really have to wow me. And I do feel like, in general, this is just okay. Like, I don't think it's terrible at all, but for me, it was a pretty boring and uninspiring film because of those reasons. I think it's so fascinating what you say about how it's weird Stephen King doing this. You know, someone who has come up with some of the most creative and interesting horror tropes and characters and settings and worlds that we've ever seen. And I think that this is, I think there's absolutely many reasons why this has never been adapted until now. I think ultimately it's probably not one of his best works, we can say right off the bat. I think that it makes for such a good book idea that purposefully doesn't translate well to live action, because the entire concept of the Boogeyman, not just in this, but in general folklore, in the way we use that term, is an indescribable figure that is different to everyone.
If I said to you, what is the Boogeyman, and then you'll picture something in your head that terrifies you, that will be different to my image.
Exactly, yeah. And that's what's so awesome about that. And I think that there is an idea for a film there, and it would, to me, would be closer to an It, where it would be a more shape-shifting type creature that can take many different forms. And whilst there is some similarities with the Boogeyman and It itself, I think that it's ultimately quite an uninspired, again, and boring choice that they go with in this film. And again, I think it's just because, left to your own devices, everyone's going to come up with different things. And I, you know, I've read a few things, King was clear on, like, he really doesn't spend much time describing what the Boogeyman is or even looks like in the book. And people have said that that is the strongest part of the book, that they come up with their own different interpretations for it. And so to kind of, you're obviously, you get that stripped away because you're seeing a film. But then I guess one of the, I guess you could say, creative choices that they went with for the boogeyman is to just constantly have everything shrouded in darkness, which, you know, will come to no surprise for long-term listeners that that's one of my biggest pet peeves in these films, is just not being able to see shit. And this was almost like a new standard for me.
This is a new bar. Like,
yeah, I think you're right.
Like, watching this movie, before anything happens that's spooky, the house is dark as shit. I'm like, who lives in a house like this?
And it is all daylight outside,
and the house is pitch black. I'm like, you know, if it's daylight outside, most houses, you're not getting any sort of shadow. Like, this was just obnoxious. But then... it was the darkest hospital I've ever seen. You know, hospital is one of the brightest places you go to. It was dark as fuck. Classroom, dark. Outside is just drab and dark the whole time. This color palette of this movie is dull. Mm. And that is an intentional creative choice, which I will acknowledge that it's a choice, but it's a choice that just riled me because... Mm. It took me out of the movie because it is obnoxiously dark. You know, it really is to a whole new level.
Yeah, I completely agree. Like, I was struggling so hard because I'm one of those people that, especially when it's like a creature, I'm always so excited to see it. And I get that in the first act and maybe even to the second act, you're going to hide stuff. So I don't expect it. Yeah. But when I'm in the third act of a film that is... a title character is said creature, I want to see that creature. And so I was straining my eyeballs so much to try and see, like, what are they doing here? Is it all visual effects, which, assuming by the budget, it probably is, though I couldn't actually fucking see the thing, you know, or is it some sort of cool, like, creep shows type stuff that they've actually got, you know, actual practical there? And I ended up just straining my eyes to the point of giving myself a headache, where I was like, oh my God, like, I'm hurting myself because my eyes are strained so hard trying to decipher blurry imagery within the darkness. Like, there's constantly scenes where it'll be behind a character. So I'm like staring behind a character into the darkness, trying to make out anything. And I just can't. And so the fact that was my final takeaway was like, oh yeah, I just never really got to see this thing, was really frustrating. Because yeah, I think that it's, again, it's okay in the sense of it's got a pretty, again, at this point, a setup that we have just seen a million times. That's what's so weird about this film coming out now, is like the haunting stuff feels already overdone. But then you're dealing with like the whole a family that's got like a recent member that's passed away, so they're dealing with this trauma. Like, I really don't want to be reductive, and this is definitely not aimed at this film in particular, this is just like in general, but like, I don't want to be reductive because so many of my favorite things have featured that in many different senses, but I am starting to feel fatigued with it, where it feels a bit like a cheat code, where, like, yeah, it's almost too easy to make me feel something by just immediately, for no reason whatsoever, the mother is just dead in this film.
Yeah, I think that's the thing, though. When you know, if you watch something like A Quiet Place and you earn that moment because it happens in the movie, as opposed to the movie starts and characters already... Because I mean, I'll come on to, like, tonally with this movie as well, how it made me feel when I go into it. But, yeah, like, you know, you can't just have dead characters at the start of the movie to get that emotion. I think it is too cheap.
Yeah, like, I'm sure I'm going to be not fair because I'll see something that will work and I'll be like, oh, it's amazing. But like, I remember seeing it and being introduced to this character, and it is like this downbeat dad, and he's like sad with his two children and everyone's sad. And I was like, oh yeah, like, I know I'm supposed to feel that emotion and I am feeling it. But then I was like annoyed at myself for feeling it, where I was like, no, they didn't earn it. So I don't want to give them my sympathy because it's just shit that, like, oh, that's the immediate starting point of this film, is just immediately feel sorry for this family because what they're going through is horrific and painful. And I'm like, yeah, it is. But like, why do I have to be a part of this misery that you've just kind of put upon them for no reason? And let's say it's not earned because you don't see it. And it's also not, There's no narrative reason for it that I can pull from. It's just like, she just died. And that's just annoying as well. So I get that this is going to be a very negative conversation. I can't wait to hear your thoughts on it as well. But like, it's, for me, it just washed over me, and it was very dull and very uninspired. And then I think, so like, as an overall movie, it's just fine. And again, like, a positive, and it's something that we talk about all the time that we just take for granted, but it's always worth calling out, is like, the acting is so good in this film. Again, like, across the board, everyone's brilliant. And like, it is wild that we just accept that now in a movie that I'll never watch again, that I'm obviously not positive about, that I didn't particularly enjoy watching, but like, they were all fantastic. And that is, I think, the base level now, to the point where I can't even imagine us watching a film for the show that we're positive about, that one of our negatives would be the acting wasn't good. Because nice. I think the overall acting level is so astonishingly now, yeah, that like, when we do see bad acting, which is so unbelievably minuscule these days, I almost can't even remember the last time I saw a film where I was like, they were actually bad. To the point where, yeah, like, you just take that now as read. And it is crazy that, like, it's worth mentioning in a film like this that we're not going to be positive about. But, like, they were all brilliant. I really liked the family, all of them. I liked the sort of small cameo from the character Lester Billings, which I have to say, like, the second they said his name, I was like, how, why does that just sound like such a Stephen King name?
Immediately.
But Lester Billings is like it's a fairly normal name. You could meet someone with that name and it's not outrageous. But the second he said it, I almost chuckled, because I was like, I know for a fact that only two people in the world wrote that name. It was either Stephen King or Joe Hill. and I was like, that's great, I love that. So yeah, that was a nice little fun bit for me. But yeah, it's an okay film that doesn't work for me because this isn't my genre. But then when you break it down, the lack of payoff, the overwhelming darkness, which is a choice that I can't stand. And then we haven't even talked about how little actual story there is, but I guess I'll leave that one for you. But yeah, you could give us your thoughts on this one.
I mean, I think I have to preface it the same as you, that like, it's not my cup of tea, this sort of thing. And I do think that's a really important note, because I think, you know, these movies exist for people that do like this subgenre. And I think about something like Sick that we watched recently, where it's like, oh, Kevin Williamson did like a screenplay for a slasher movie that was quite a simplistic, you know, nothing. It didn't reinvent the wheel with the slasher element. It had the COVID stuff in it, but, you know, the slasher stuff was fairly standard. But I had a pretty good time watching it because I really like slashers. And it's like, yeah, this is that for Ghost Stories, where I'm like, okay, yeah, it's a generic, like, haunting family thing. It's well acted, you know, it is well made, like, but it just doesn't interest me at all. And it just has so many things in it that are so generic. And it, you know, if you watch a slasher movie and you see the character run up the stairs instead of out the door, you may like get pissed off and switch it off. You know, and if I watch a haunting movie where it's just this day night cycle of darkness, like with no real substance, I want to switch it off. You know, and so it just depends what wheelhouse you're in. But yeah, for me, this movie was a chore, and the biggest part of it was how dark it was. Really, like, and I found it so, like, that being the color palette being so sad. And this whole, the movie is just utterly depressing. You know, the family are dealing with this grief. The Lester character commits suicide in their house. Like, so the daughters are just miserable. She's being bullied at school. She has this friend group that's horrible to her. Just, there's not a moment of happiness in this movie. Like, not one moment of happiness. And I found myself just getting bummed out watching it, just feeling like shit. And it, like, I sat there in the cinema and I just kind of wanted to close my eyes, really, and not watch it anymore. And I did a few times for like a chunk of time, just because I needed a break. I needed like the darkness of my eyelids to like just break up the dull color palette of what I was watching. And I'm not saying that to be like ironic. I genuinely did that. And yeah, I found the plot very depressing. Like I said, just no happiness to it. And I think, you know, again, that has a purpose. We've seen films that are purposefully sad, and you know, I've recently just been rewatching Midnight Mass, that is incredibly sad at points and also utterly fantastic. You know, so it's not, you know, that doesn't necessarily mean it's bad, but this just, the sum of all those parts did just get me where I'm like, I just wanted it to end. And then the fact that this kind of, you know, the whole thing that you should be getting behind in this movie is the boogeyman, and what is the boogeyman and how is he haunting them? You know, it was what Smile was all about, trying to, you know, Smile felt a lot like the Ring movie, where it's like, okay, you get cursed and now you need to figure out how to stop this curse. This didn't feel like that at all. It felt very generic, where our characters were just bundling along, and in the end was like, oh, well, I guess we'll go see Lester's family. Yeah. And then they're like, oh, yeah, it's just like haunting. And it wasn't like, oh, yeah, you know, they're just like, oh, it's been around for ages. And they're like, how'd you kill it? And they're like, well, probably like, well, it hangs out in dark, so probably like light.
So booby
and, you know,
traps,
fire's, isn't it? Fire's quite good, and, you know. Yeah, and it just, it, you know, all of that just felt really unearned. But you know, you spoke about how you were straining your eyes to, like, see the boogeyman. For me, I just had no interest. I couldn't give a fuck what he looked like. Like, I wasn't looking once to see what he looked like. I didn't care, because the movie didn't, you know, warrant me caring, because there was no story behind it. You know, there was no, this is what it is. So because there was no explanation, I didn't really care. And I think, you know, that for me is the strangest, the part of this that doesn't add up, really. Because I think, you know, this being a King story from so long ago makes sense. You know, that okay, that's why King produced it back then. It was, you know, it was more fresh back then than it is in 2023. I don't think Rob did a bad job of you know, directing it, or you know, like I say, everything, the movie is well made. The budget is staggering, but there is a lot of CG, but still pretty staggering. But you know, the movie's, it's not, I think people that like this sort of thing and want to go to the cinema and just get spooked might have a good time. But the piece of the puzzle that confuses me is the Beckham Woods part, because them kind of adapting this screenplay and creating this screenplay, I thought would have given it the depth I wanted, and would have given me, you know, something about the background of the boogeyman, or just something that held it together that piqued my interest, because their work, like, has absolutely done that in the last few years, and it staggers me, because it was the part of, you know, of those three things, them two writing a screenplay for a horror movie had me more excited than even it being a King project, you know, and of the three, that's the one that didn't deliver the most by a mile. So, you know, that is my biggest disappointment coming out of this. But yeah, and the other thing is, genuinely, you know, we watched this movie, what, 3 or 4 days ago?
Yeah.
Was it? You know, and 4 days ago, and I had to spend a good 5 or 10 minutes racking my brain, getting this movie back in my head, because it instantly went. It just went where I'm like, it didn't offend me. Watching it, I was disinterested, but I wasn't like, you know, some movies that really riled me, like recently. I just wanted it to end, and when it ended, I just went poof and just disappeared.
Yeah, that's, you know, the thing. Like, this is way better than Dash Cam, but I remember Dash Cam.
Yeah, because it left it invoked me. Feelings in me.
Yeah, that, this, again, I just keep saying, it's so uninspiring. This film just feels very boring and generic, to the point where it's like, we've said before, if you're releasing one of these types of movies now, you need to make like an all-timer. Because the goodwill that has been burned, like when The Conjuring came out to now, is just a completely different world. And I don't think The Conjuring would, you know, get the same reception if it was released in 2023 than it did back then.
We've said that about movies where we're like, that's probably on a level to The Conjuring, but it came out 10 years too late.
Yeah. Definitely. And so there was a few things you said, like with the story. I kind of read a few things about the actual short story, and already the feeling I got was that there was a lot of stuff cut, which kind of blows me away. Like, in particular, the Lester character was a much bigger presence in the book.
He was the most interesting part of this movie. That scene was great. Like,
well, that actor's fantastic as well. And I do think him being just in a cameo was... It's one of those things similar when you have Richard Brake in a movie for a short period of time, and it reflects negatively on everyone else, because you're like, oh, I just want to see more of him. And, like, his performance was so good that whilst I do think everyone is good in this, I was like, yeah, he's the best character in this, and he's the best actor in this, and he's in it the least out of, like, the sort of named characters, as it were. But yeah, that was like one of the changes. But just in general, there was more going on and more subplots, it seemed, which blows me away because this is just so lacking a feature-length script. It's like we both said after we watched this film, where it was like, this was the most I've seen a film that was based upon a short story that felt that way.
Yeah.
In way more than like even Lights Out, based on a short film, and all these different ones. Like Black Phone last year did a fantastic job of taking that short story and adding so much to it. And this feels like they almost took away from it, which again, based upon the people who's adapting it, that just blows me away. One thing that was interesting, especially based upon the conversation we've had about how sort of bleak and just miserable this film is that the book was actually more bleak and more miserable, which I guess doesn't surprise us based upon the era in which King wrote this story. But like the ending in particular has changed massively to make it more upbeat for the family. And it is funny that that's kind of one of the biggest changes, is like, yeah, we didn't want people to feel completely miserable.
We all know King can't write an ending.
Yeah, but it also just didn't work, you know, because it was still, when you're similar with the knock at the cabin, it's like you can't just change one part of it and think that the rest is going to be as strong, because it's a foundation, and you know, it's a tower, and you're just ruining the whole thing if you change one element of it, in my opinion.
Yeah, it's a journey.
Exactly. So that's frustrating. I think I remember exactly when this film lost me, because I think for a while I was giving it the benefit of the doubt. Well, I don't even know why.
Boogeyman.
No, that's the thing. Like, I really went in with this with a massively open mind. Like, I was really excited to be at the cinema. And I think that with the people involved in this was why I was giving it so much credit. I really wanted to like this film. And even big stuff that was turning me off, like you mentioned the friends of the lead and kind of the school scenes, and they're so unbearably shit, where I was like rolling my eyes so much when she's wearing her mother's dress and she gets like the ice cream or whatever it is on it, where I'm like, and again, and just just the compounding misery on the characters, where I was like, God, just give me a fucking break. Like, let something good happen. Let there be some light in this darkness.
Yeah, can't Q-Boy come along and save her? Like, come on.
It was so, and I know, where's like the neighbor when you need them? So it was so frustrating anyway, but I was still giving it the benefit of the doubt. And it was when they went to the other house and kind of had that scene where I was like, oh, they introduced a new character and there was stuff going on, and they gave us kind of a bit of information dump where I was like, oh, some things are progressing now aside from just what Lester told us, because there's basically two scenes involving two characters that just tell us everything we need to know about the boogeyman. One is the Lester scene early on, and then it's this scene, and that's all we get. But after that I was like, okay, something might happen now. And then the scene after that, it immediately goes back into she's walking around the house in the dark at night waiting to see something. And I was like, oh my, I was like, this movie's got nothing. I knew it in that moment where I was like, oh, we've now hit the halfway point. This is where we should be leaving this behind and moving on with the rest of the film. And it immediately went back into that routine. I couldn't believe it, that she was walking around that goddamn house in the dark again, where we'd already had that like five times at that point, and this wasn't even the halfway point of characters walking around in the dark that we'd then see for the rest of the film. But that was when I knew, where I was like, oh, I thought you were just gonna throw me these tropes early on with like, oh, the kid's got the light on the ball and she's gonna roll it under the bed. Like, I was like, oh, they're getting them all out of the way early. And I was like, and that was the scene where I went, oh no.
We saw that all like half a dozen times.
Definitely, yeah. We'd only had it once or twice maybe at that point. So yeah, I was, that was when the benefit of the doubt went. and I fully realized, like, oh no, that's what this film is, and I know I'm not gonna like this now. So then the second half, after that point, it was just over the halfway, was painful. That was when I completely disengaged. Yeah. I was bored out of my mind. This movie fatigued the hell out of me. Again, one of the things I said to you after I watched it was, like, this felt like watching the last film at a day at Fright Fest, when we've seen six films at the cinema. Like, and there's a reason to be fatigued then, because that's 10 out of 10.
Because you genuinely are.
It's like over 10 to 12 hours watching films at the cinema. Whereas this was a 90-minute film, and I felt knackered after it. And I think it was just because the second half was so boring, and I was so disengaged. But then with how dark everything was, and how much I was struggling to see, it killed me, man. Like, I really lost the will for film.
I mean, this was a 90-minute film that I drank two coffees in as well, you know, and I still felt fatigued at the end of it.
Yeah,
it was wild. Put that on your DVD box.
We've had some great box quotes this year.
Yeah, but I was similar though with, like, because the Leicester scene I did think was so strong, and it brought enough goodwill, and then the boogeyman appeared, and then that dwindled and dwindled and dwindled. And I don't know if this is the scene you were talking about, but it was with our kind of our lead, where she kind of I think it is when she first goes and meets Lester's wife, and we have this whole scene with, like, Sadie talking to Lester's wife and in the car with her friend, and then she comes home and, like, talks to Sawyer, and then there's, like, this really obnoxious jump scare, and she just wakes up in bed asleep, and I'm like, well, like, was all of that a dream? Like, how much of the last 20 minutes is a dream? Because the last time she was awake, like, I don't know when that was. And then when did she actually fall asleep? And what part? It really threw me. Do you know what I'm talking about? Like, that
exactly
scene
what you're talking about. Because it used a completely cheap, you know, it was a dream type thing, which obviously I'm annoyed about.
Yeah, but I didn't even know when the dream started and ended. I immediately stopped
thinking about that because I knew the movie wasn't going to explain it. Where I was like, I'm assuming that the second the jump scare happened, like the second before that, was when she was dreaming. So it's like, we didn't see her go home and go to sleep. It just makes no sense. But what I will say is, it was a really good jump scare. Like, it audibly got movement out of me, which is, like, rare for a jump scare. So I'll give it credit for that, but then no, it was like, it was that which I was like, oh, that was good. But it was the scene directly after that. So we have the jump scare from a dream, and then she just walks through, because then she's like, oh, I need to see, I'll just walk up.
Then
she just walked around the night, and I went, oh, this movie's got nothing.
Well, yeah, because that's what it did, wasn't it? Because what was the jump scare? Was it in daylight?
Yeah, she was like, saw her sister, and then, yeah, I won't completely ruin it, but yeah, it was like, yeah, she just got back in the day.
Yeah. And then obviously we suddenly get that really quick troll transition to night, and we are, you know, we're in day, we were starting to get answers, and then bosh, wandering around the house again. But it really threw me, that, where I was like, I just did not. And I'm struggling to remember the specifics of the jump scare. Like, I don't think it landed on me as strong. It just, and because all I felt was this anger of like, when the fuck did she fall asleep?
Yeah. I liked it, and I would typically give it more credit, but it loses me because of the fact that it's not earned. Like, it completely uses a cheap technique, which is just, like I say, it's storyline wise, it makes no sense whatsoever. The last thing I will say is that, like, with these types of films, as we mentioned before, they're not our cup of tea, but we see a lot of them at the cinema, and they typically have a lot of people in there. And our screening had people, and I think that you can generally gauge what people think about these films. Like, when we see stuff like Smile, it's that we get that same routine, which is the quiet scene where everyone's hushed and holding their breath. You then get the scare and everyone jumps, and then there's like that chatter after it, because a lot of people, when they can't handle a jump scare, they'll need to just say something to kind of get it out. And there was none of that. At no point did I hear the jump followed by the little chitter chatter that then goes away. Like, that didn't happen once, where I was like, oh, this movie isn't tense or scary to this audience that is invested in that. Like, we don't care, and we just don't get got either. But, like, we're not coming for that ride. which is why a movie like Smile we liked, but we didn't love, because it's not our type of film. Whereas I think for the general, that's why we recommended that movie strongly, even though it wasn't as good for us, because we were like, yeah, the general going audience is going to love this film, because it delivers what they want on this type of film. Mm-hmm. Whereas I think this, nowhere near, like, if people are like, oh, I really hope this is going to be scary, because it's got that traditional James Wan-esque trailer with, like, you know, the light scene in particular with the ball under the bed. That's just straight out of, like, a James Wan thing. With the claps and stuff. Lot of people will go see this wanting for their popcorn horror scare on a Saturday night, and I don't think it delivers that.
Wait for the one with Ash's severed hand. Like, wait for that one. Like,
yeah.
I think that one's going to be more of your cinema jumpiness. Because I agree that, like, I noticed when we left the cinema, no one was talking.
No.
Everyone got up and everyone looked really bored and drab. And it reminded me a bit of like a horror movie where everyone had been like, you know, hypnotized or something, where everyone would just look really down and like numb from what they just watched in not a good way. Just not happy. It didn't feel like a happy audience. Whereas, yeah, like when we left Smile, people were laughing and talking about different things, and you know, like it felt like that popcorn horror what you want to go see.
Definitely, it was a Saturday night, which is like that's typically what it is that people are going there for that. And then, yeah, I completely agree. There's usually that energy that you feel that those people got what they wanted from that film more often than not. Whereas this was, and again, I think it ties back to what this film is actually about, which is it's a really downbeat, sad film. So I think it will either bummed out people, or for us, it would have been both, which is bummed them out and bored them. So yeah, it's sadly not, that's certainly not a good thing. And like, it is funny, the shell shocked walking away, because you could say there was a similar reaction to something like Midsommar, but the actual reason for it couldn't have been any more different. But it was because people were not ready for what that film was and had no reaction, so there was no talking. Whereas I think for this movie, it's obviously extremely easy movie to understand the concept of. So it was just like, oh yeah, that was just not. I've just sat down and watched a movie for an hour and a half, and now I'm leaving with the person I came with, and we don't have anything to talk about this film. Like, that's kind of how I felt about people. But yeah, well, that's it really. What's your recommendation for this one?
Yeah, don't like I said, I think especially with the trailers that we saw and the fact that there are so many of these movies coming out, if you're a fan of this sort of thing, I think you're going to be spoilt for choice over the summer. Yeah. And I do think this one is an average and is just so downbeat that you're not going to get that fun like you did from A Smile or something like that. I think you know, even being a fan of this, I wouldn't be recommending it to you, but I certainly wouldn't recommend it in any way from my own personal enjoyment of it.
Yeah, I completely agree. I wouldn't recommend this on any level. I would definitely wouldn't recommend it as a cinema horror. I wouldn't recommend it in general, and then even trying to be subjective and put my own feelings aside, I think I can still gauge when these are good or not. And I don't think this is a good one of those films, enough to recommend it. Certainly not. Like I say, I think this is so okay. Like, I think everything about this is so middle of the road, that it just ends up being so uninspiring. Like, there's so many, even sevens that are better than this. So like, it's just so middle, just meh, everything about it. Which is a shame. And I completely agree with you that there's a lot of these types of films coming out, which again is exhausting for us. But like the trailer for Insidious, I think looks interesting and looks better than this. And that trailer for The Nun too, is the first time I've seen that. It audibly made me laugh multiple times.
It did me.
That's the intent, but I was dying of laughter more. So I'm like, I'm excited for that film now, because I was laughing so much in that trailer. It looks so goddamn stupid, and just seeing that nun character again, I was like, oh, that's great. So yeah, I had definitely more fun watching the Nun 2 trailer than I did watching The Boogeyman. But yeah, that was our discussion on The Boogeyman. I will take a quick break and we'll be right back. So yeah, that is pretty much it for another week. Another cinema horror in the bag.
I tell you what's a good cinema horror.
I was going to say, I hope they get good again soon.
Yeah, I tell you what's a good one. Because I did a little rewatch this week.
I was going to say, I hope it's the one I've rewatched, because that is, what a goddamn film.
Wow. Such a banger. Like, watching it again, the biggest takeaway, like, I'm not going to re-review the movie, but the biggest takeaway I got second time round was the pacing. Mm. The movie just runs at such a great pace.
It's like
pace,
2 hours, you know, there's so much in it.
Yeah, like from opening scene, and I think as well, when we talk about like movies, we're always ragging on them for being long and pacing and that. I'm like, well, no, this was a 2 hour movie that just went through with a blink, where, you know, the killer is on our main cast straight away, you know, because even the opening scene, you know, it's a way of protection for Sam at that point. And then straight away, we're into chasing Sam, you know, and the core four, and it never lets up. It just goes from scene to scene to scene to scene, and there's very little wasted time. And yeah, I really liked kind of a lot of the additional characters. You know, the cute boyfriend from across the hall was brilliant. Like his all of his scenes are great. Like when he comes in, like he plays it to perfection. Really good kills. I enjoyed the building on the part five legacy, and ultimately the core four, like their stupid name that they come up with, but I really love all four of them for different ways. I watching this made me realize how much I want a Scream 7. Like, where I'm like, I'm not done. Like, I'm not even close to done. Like, not when it's this good. Like, I'm willing to let it drop, like the bar drop a little bit before I'm willing to get off this ride. Because right now we're at the top of the roller coaster for like what could be a post Wes Craven Scream. So I'm like, I don't want to get off yet. Like, let's keep going. Like, you know, maybe I'll regret those words, but I'm willing to accept a lesser Scream movie and I'll still have a good time.
Yeah, I agree, because I think we got that in Scream 5 and it was still really good.
But I think like I was willing to accept a lesser movie than Scream 5 initially. Like, that exceeded my expectations. Like, do you know what I mean?
Yeah, well, that's my take with Scream 6 is that, yeah, I would be down for more, but I just don't care right now because I loved Scream 6 so much. And, like, I would watch that again now, and I only rewatched it, like, a month ago. It's that good. Like, I just, it's one of those films that I've got a feeling that over time I'll like it even more, and it'll become one of those movies, like a Scream 4, that I'll just want to champion because it's, I love everything about it. It's just so much fun. And yeah, the cast is exceptional. I'm just thinking back to that, the chase scene now with the ladder. It's so good. There's so many good scenes. And let alone the subversion of the subway scene, I thought was genius, how we really thought that we kind of knew what was going on there based upon the trailers. And such a genius use of... Yeah, just a genius use of, like, us unfortunately having to see a trailer a lot because we go to the cinema so much. And typically, that can really dampen certain scenes. And, like, even stuff like Knock at the Cabin, which I don't think was a reason why that ultimately the movie didn't deliver, but, like, I really liked that trailer, but we saw it so much to the point that seeing that cool setup in the film was nowhere near as interesting, because I'd seen, you know, Batista talk to the little girl outside. Like, we'd seen it so many times. So I remember when we watched that film, I was like, I can't wait until we're at the point when the trailer ends, because then the film, like, begins for me. So for them to kind of get away from that and actually make that subway scene so much better, it's like, it's, I love everything about Scream 6. It's awesome. I couldn't believe how good it is still.
It really is, like, yeah, it really does hold up.
Yeah, such an awesome film. Like, I really hope that we have films like that, because I'm worried for this year how that's just so strong right now. And I think the movie's awesome. Like, I think we should have better films than that, and we certainly should have more original films that are on that par, definitely.
Yeah, I think back of this year, and we've spoken about Unwelcome on this podcast, and we've spoken about Scream 6, and, like, there are a few, you know, really good films, but the year as a whole right now, you know, we're almost at the, you know, halfway point, and it's not been fantastic.
No, there's only, for me, there's only three films that I would like to speak massively passionately about in a top 10. Which, yeah, given that we're at the halfway point, that's not great. You know, you'd hope that the back half is going to fill that up quickly, but to only have three, and one of those we could have saw last year, we just didn't. So, it is crazy, but obviously we've had the very, like, the absolute heights of TV so far this year, which has carried it. And I think with The Last of Us and now going into Black Mirror, like, I think I can already tell that 2023 is going to be remembered not for film for me. It's and like, aside, I know we don't talk about them too much, but this has been a ridiculous year for video games. Like, even just for horror, if you're only a horror fan, you've had Dead Space remake, you've had Resident Evil 4 remake, and you get an Alan Wake 2. Like, this is already an all-timer for horror video games. Like, so it's crazy. Let alone all of the other sensational video games.
Also, like, I've got to bring a, like, a public service announcement for a TV show that we've been sleeping on.
What's that?
Like, it's a TV show. Oh, I can't
start another TV show.
Mate, you might have
to. I'm in like, mid-season 5 of Lost, and I need to get it done.
well, I mean, I've watched 8 episodes in a week of this TV show. It's called From.
Oh, yeah, the sci-fi one, yeah.
Yeah,
I do really want to see it.
You speak about
who's in it. Like,
this has got yeah, obviously a cast member, but it's got some serious Lost vibes as well.
Yeah,
it's basically like this Bermuda Triangle of a town where each person that finds their way there they're just traveling on a road in America and end up getting lost and find their way to this town, and once you get in the town you can't escape, and when night falls in this town, these I don't want to say the word ghosts, because well, they're not ghosts, they're monsters, they're people, but they look like people but they are monsters, ascend upon the town, and the townspeople that are living there have got these talismans that keep them out of their houses, but if you invite them in or you don't get safe in a house with a talisman, these monsters will fucking rip you to shreds. There's no like halfway house, they just literally rip you to shreds. That it's quite violent. These monsters, it's very oh shit, what the hell's that movie called? It Follows.
Oh yeah.
Where they just they look like people, they walk with this sinister smile, almost like From smile, and if they get close enough to you, that's when they show their true form, and then they rip you to shreds. And there are just so many mysteries and questions around the show, you know. How are they caught there, you know? What is this town? What are these people? How do I get home? And then there's a whole other, you know, there's loads of questions as you get into it. And it's one where I'm like, okay, like, there's 10 episodes in season one. I mean, I'm 8 episodes in. They've asked a lot of questions. I'm very much enjoying it. I'm really interested to see whether we start to get some answers. But so far I've been really having a blast with it. And I think, you know, it's on a weird channel. It's on like MGM Plus in the UK. it's like, you know, it's kind of just snuck out there, and like season two is happening right now. We're almost at the end of season two, but I'm obviously playing catch up in season one. But yeah, like I've been very much enjoying it. It's kind of,
is this not on Sky or something? I could have sworn I saw an advert for it.
Yeah, well, I think that's the channel, MGM Plus.
Oh, is that a Sky channel in the UK, is it?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. And yeah, you know, it really is a sci-fi, but also really horror, because, like I say, when people get caught out, they get violently killed.
Mm.
And yeah, just so many cool questions and different concepts and a lot to go into that I won't unpack, but it caught me off guard. It sounded interesting, and you know, if that synopsis interests you, then I think it's one where it's like, okay, I've only scraped the surface. Like I say, there's a lot more going on, and I'm really enjoying it so far. Hence why I nailed almost a season in a week.
Yeah, I'm definitely going to watch it. It was already on my radar, but I'm trying so hard to not watch so many TV shows. That was genuinely one of the things I was trying to do at the start of this year, and I've failed miserably. I watched so much, and it's just so time consuming. Especially like I mentioned, with this year being an all-timer for video games, that to the point that I started it. Like, I'm not going to stop now.
But when did you start?
Last year.
Oh, okay, at least it was last year. I was going to say, that's a shit this year resolution to be like, I'm going to watch less TV and then start rewatching
the leftovers. Like, I immediately started it, and then I kind of put it on the back burner for a bit, but now I'm in season 5, which I've been dying to rewatch. But I do want to watch True Blood as well, because I bought that on Blu-ray. Like, I have so much I want to watch, but this show definitely speaks to me anyway. But like, just reading about it now, it's one of the directors is Jack Bender, who has directed currently like half of the episodes, so 10 out of the 20, and he's basically the best director from Lost. He directed 38 episodes of Lost, including the series finale, and basically all the big episodes from like season 2 onwards. So I'm a huge fan of him. He went on to do like Game of Thrones and other TV shows as well.
He did a shit ton of Alias as well.
He's like one of the best TV directors of all time. So to have him on board, that's already exciting, let alone cast members. This entire premise speaks to me, it being this like sci-fi horror hybrid. So I'm definitely going to watch it. I love that there's at least one more than a season. Obviously season 2 is airing currently. So that speaks to me as well, because like, as I keep mentioning, this wait is awful. Like, another show that I watched last year was Severance, which is an amazing show if people love sci-fi. Severance is so good, and like, now with the delay and the writer's strike and everything, I don't know when I'm ever going to see that show again, and it just sucks. But like, it's so good, but I wouldn't recommend people watch it now, because you just never know, and it ends on such a huge cliffhanger at the end of season 1, and I'm like dying to know what happens. But that's just the That's the thing with TV.
I'm really glad as well. Well, that is the worry, that you just never get it again. That's why I was glad that I know I've got season 2 to jump into.
That's what's worrying about this, is because this doesn't have a major channel behind it. That really worries me. Like, I'm glad I'm seeing talk of it. You know, people seem to like it, which is good. But you just don't know with these things, that like, it's a miracle that we're getting Chucky later this year. And you know, it was a miracle, obviously, as we mentioned before, that we got like 3 seasons of Ash vs. Evil Dead. But you just don't know with these things, especially with sci-fi. That's the biggest TV sci-fi
dives.
Burnt so many times that like, I need to know that was why that I never watched The Leftovers at the time, because I needed to know that it was all out until I watched it. Because you get so invested in the lore and wanting to know, like, this is such a cool premise. And even though I don't fully want to know the answers, you know, that comes from being a Lost fan, is like, I don't need to know every answer. I'm perfectly fine with making up some of it in my head. But like, you do want to know, don't you? You want to know stuff. So,
yeah. And I think with this one as well, because it's so overtly like, you are seeing things like these monsters, et cetera, et cetera. Whereas Lost, you weren't seeing so much. You know, you were creating a lot of questions as well, whereas these are overtly asking those questions. Characters are literally writing questions down on a wall. So, you know, I think, you know, you have to inevitably then answer some of those questions a little bit more.
Yeah, definitely. I'll definitely get to it for sure. Like, I'll try and get to it this year. And definitely, you know, once season 2's out.
You know, that's more optimistic than I hope for. So, you know, this year I'll take. But yeah, like I say, I think it's episode 7 or 8 is on right now of season 2. So like, yeah, by the time you've caught up, there's 2 seasons to watch.
That's fantastic. That just reminds me, think about that now, like, I wonder when Damon Lindelof's next show is, because it's been a few years now since Watchmen, and like, I need to rewatch The Watchmen. That's so good. He's just an absolute genius.
Mister, I'm not watching any TV. I'm gonna rewatch Lost, True Blood.
And all I've been doing is rewatching Black Mirror, like,
yeah.
And now obviously I'm rewatching Lost, like, and I'm obviously going to rewatch The Last of Us very soon when I get the 4K. Like, all I do is spend all my time rewatching TV shows, because there's so many good ones, even though I'd consider it by far my sort of third favorite form of entertainment behind films and video games. There's just so many good TV shows.
Like, something like this, where I was the same, where I'm like, I don't want to watch more TV because it is my third favorite. You know, I want to watch movies. I love playing video games, TV shows. I'm like, God damn it. I just can't, you know, I want to watch them because the quality is so good right now.
Yeah.
you know, and I'm like, oh, and then, yeah, with this, I was like, oh, I haven't got time. And then literally the first episode had me, where the first episode ended and it was really late. And I was like, I've got to watch a second.
Yeah.
I need to, it ended in a way where I'm like, you bastards. So I've learned now that, like, I have to watch the beginning of the next episode and then turn it off.
Yeah.
Because otherwise I don't turn it off.
That's the thing with books for me as well, and why I hardly finish any or even get started, is because there's so many that I want to read, but it is just so far behind all these other forms of entertainment. But I am nearly finishing my current book. I've got about 50 pages left, so in the next couple of weeks I'll definitely finish it, and we will be talking about it on the show, because it is a pretty spectacular horror novel that we've mentioned it before. A certain Clive Barker wrote it, so we'll definitely talk about that when I finish it. I'm so excited to finish it, hopefully in the next week or so. That was it. That was episode 351. Just a last reminder, no show next week. You should have heard that in the news earlier, but don't worry, we're still here. We're just we're busy, so
we'll probably be back.
Because I need to talk about Black Mirror to someone. So
Matt will be back.
I'll be back. Five solo shows. Very excited for that one. That was episode 351. Thanks for listening as always, and we'll see you again very soon.
See you later, everyone.
Shut up, I can't. Mainly because I never could. How could I start that?